Hello out there. This is Rick Lysak, and this song called Christmas Night in Marion. I was raised most of my childhood in Marion, Ohio, and my partner Zach Rowe and Lysak and Rowe sang and arranged the vocals, and Sylvia Mitchell, who played just a magnificent violin part, and Todd Remy, who played drums, and Dan Hoffman, who played bass. And I play guitar and sing, and happy to have done it, and hopefully will engender memories, pleasant memories, in people who hear it, who grew up celebrating Christmas. So I want to wish everybody a happy holiday.
My bones ache more each winter, but I still feel a glow when I think of the time I was a child in Marion, Ohio, at Grandma's house on Christmas night. My third grade class sang 6:30 mass. I soloed a verse of "What Child Is This?" By 9 we were driving to Grandma's, three boys in the back and a trunk full of gifts: bacon and eggs, peppered potatoes, hot butter toast with strawberry jam. Ate till we couldn't and then had cookies Grandma made in the shape of a lamb. Christmas night in Marion, it was Christmas night in Marion, in Marion. Snow was falling, shining like diamonds, as I looked out at a silent street light. Grandma's house on Christmas night. Train click clacking out in the darkness kept me sleepless in my bed back then. Didn't know how lucky I was. Christmas night in Marion. Was the gift she gave me that morning, gray wool, white stitches lined in blue silk. Christmas night in Marion, it was Christmas night in Marion, in Marion. A time
Sherry Cook Stanforth reading from my poetry collection, Drone String. Family Reunion, 1979. Some dishes on the table steam with extra spice, secret ingredients. "Stay away from that one," she hiss whispers, bending a plucked eyebrow toward the red-haltered, half-naked, high-heeled, teeter-tottering cousin once removed. "She'll sink her teeth in just as soon as look at ya." Makes me hungry for a little taste of something, so I spoon in, overfilling my plate, recalling that magical oldest girl who held a bridle between glossy nails, leading me far across ironweed fields on a dapple-butted pony. Biting down hard on a hay stem, she taught us to sing uncut versions of Miss Lucy Had a Steamboat, Under God's Own Sky, while inside raged a kitchen table war, rapid-fire grown-up attacks over stacks of bills and deployed probate shares. Not that we cared. All of us knew enough to steer clear. We choked back tattletales and staunched our blood with leaves pulled from the sweet gum. We peed bubbling streams behind the shed while this queen showed us how to swing our hips in a roundabout stir, going somewhere good. She said she'd go one day, and did. Auntie, with an elephant's memory, cuts her food, whispering about that time she came back home with nerve enough to rip right through a family Christmas dinner. Cougar clinging to her college boy lover and a fifth of Jim Beam. I just nod, but want to say, who cares? Can't you hear her laughing over there, unbridled and prancing for all of our best soup-stirring stories, our fastest front porch picking? She's come home to us again. Now she's dancing right on the table, more than ready to gobble up the sweetest crumbs.
This is Michael Evan Haney, director of A Christmas Carol at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. And from all of us at the Playhouse, we wish you a Merry Christmas and God bless us, everyone.
Hi, I'm Lee Stoller. I chose this tune, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, for a couple of reasons, really. I guess I first heard it done by Judy Garland, and I was a little guy at the time, but it struck me as so pensive and lovely and soulful. For some reason, Mary Ellen never loved this tune the way I did, but she sang it just great. And when I play it, I try to capture the warmth and the soul that came through when she sang it. Ballads are my thing. Ballads are what I really love to play best because my soul is on display. I hope you all like my soul, and I hope you all have a wonderful Christmas. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joshua Steele.
And I'm Charlie Harper.
And we're from the a cappella group No Promises. We'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Hi, everybody. My name's Brad Myers.
Hi, I'm Mike Scharf.
We recorded a version of The Great Pumpkin Waltz by Vince Guaraldi. We did it primarily as a duo for guitar and acoustic bass. And we added some lovely percussion tracks by Juan Menga.
We took a classic 3-4 composition and just turned it into a little bit of a Latin 6-8.
Yeah, so we put our own little spin on this, and we hope you enjoy it.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Navy Petty Officer Alex Bamberger from Cincinnati, Ohio. Currently serving aboard USS Kearney, forward deployed to the Mediterranean Sea. I want to wish my family and everyone in my hometown of Cincinnati a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I hope to see you all very soon. Hoo day. Go Navy.
I'm Roberta Schultz, wishing you a holiday season filled with love and light. Coming up is a song from my solo album, One Small Step, featuring the keyboard magic of Richard Putnam. The song is entitled January Thaw. May we all have an amazing new year.
This is Mike Breen, the music editor from Cincinnati's City Beat, and I just would like to wish everyone a happy holiday.
Hey everyone, I'm Jim Pels, and we've got a song for you that I wrote. It's called Christmas in the Canyon, and it's basically kind of my tribute to all the great music that came out of Laurel Canyon in the late 60s and early 70s. And helping me out on it, we have Mr. Scott Hacker on guitar, Mr. Steve Mueller on the pedal steel guitar, Mike Georgian on the bass, Jason Smart on the drums, and then I sing and play guitar as well. So hope you enjoy Christmas in the Canyon. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
It's three more days to Christmas, but I guess you'd never know, 'cause it's palms instead of pine trees, sand instead of snow. There's a big old yellow sun hanging in a denim sky. It's Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. Jackson's baking brownies, and Roger got the bird. Steven's in the corner, man, he hasn't said a word. Cousin Linda couldn't make it, but JD said it'd try. It's
Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. Christmas in the canyon, and everything is green. The sunset on the water is the sweetest thing you see. We all come together just to have ourselves a time. It's Christmas in the canyon with all these friends of mine. When I heard the California was the place you wanna be, I took off from Oklahoma, and that's the last they saw me. But you know I miss my family so much that I could cry. It's Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. Got a heart made of steel, and the Star of Bethlehem is trying to find a better deal. Saying points on the back end are the only way to fly. It's Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. I met a dancer down on Wilshire, she said she lost her way. She didn't know a soul, have a friendly place to stay. I said, you're coming home with me, girl. I got two good reasons why. It's Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. Christmas in the canyon, and everything is green. The sunset on the water is the sweetest thing you see. We all come together just to have ourselves a time. It's Christmas in the canyon with all these friends of mine. These are troubled times we live in, troubled times for sure. All I want, my brother, is you to come home from the war. And then we'll have a celebration and we'll drain our glasses dry. Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by. Christmas in the canyon, all our friends are coming by.
I'm Barbara Gray, and I'd like to share a Christmas poem with you. The poem is titled Two, that's T-O-O, Two Wise Men, and it's by Frank X. Walker, the 2014 Poet Laureate of Kentucky. It is included in an anthology titled A Kentucky Christmas, edited by Georgella Lyon, who is the current Poet Laureate of Kentucky. Two Wise Men by Frank X. Walker. My earliest inclinations were way too secular for membership in the House of God Youth Choir at 12. I was bound for hell and the Little League, but if Mama needed an extra angel, wise man, or an emergency Joseph, she'd flip her old singer to the upright position, scrape together enough thread and a yard or two of old curtains and sheets, trusting that I knew all the words just 'cause I lived in her house. And she played the Temptations Christmas album round the clock as soon as the Thanksgiving turkey was hash. I didn't know frankincense from mirth. Still don't, but I learned to make up my own words to Silent Night and to stop asking how a little baby boy born that close to Africa to such ordinary folks could grow up to be so white. I'm Barbara Gray, wishing you and yours a joyous holiday.
Hi, this is Brian Powers, and I'm a local Cincinnati music historian, and I do research on King Records. And I like to introduce two songs that were recorded for King Records by Freddie King, the great blues guitarist who recorded for the Federal label for King Records in the early 60s. July 2nd, 1961, Freddie King recorded two Christmas songs. The first one was called Christmas Tears. And on the flip side, he also recorded I Hear Jingle Bells, both recorded on the same day. And those two songs reached number 26 on the R&B charts in December of 1961.
I hear sleigh bells ringing, but I haven't heard a word from you in years. I hear sleigh bells ringing, but I haven't heard a word from you in years. Oh, I hear choir singing, and I'm just sitting here crying Christmas tears. Everybody's singing Merry Christmas as they watch the starry skies filled with reindeers. Everybody's singing Merry Christmas as they watch the starry skies filled with reindeer. Oh, I'm smiling on the outside, but on the inside I'm crying Christmas tears. Though you've been gone for a long, long time, it's Christmas and I can't get you off of my mind. It seems since you've been gone like 100 years or more, but if you was here with me, I could hang Merry Christmas on my door. I need you, darling, to hold me tight. I need you, dear, on this Christmas night. As I sit and think of the lonely years, I can't help but cry Christmas tears. Whoa, Christmas dear. I have jingle bells ringing in my ear.
Now they're I'm Dave Lewis, and I would like to share with you Ruth Lyon's first Christmas record. It was once said of Ruth Lyon's that she wrote a new Christmas song every year from 1939 to 1967, mainly to raise money for her charity, the Ruth Lyon's Children's Christmas Fund, still a going concern even today. That should mean that she wrote 28 Christmas songs, but after reviewing Ruth's recordings, sheet music, and copyright registrations, I can only find 24. Where did the other four songs go? It's simply that she didn't get around to writing Christmas songs during the years of the Second World War, an era that didn't feel very Christmassy to anybody. Once the war ended, however, Ruth not only resumed writing the songs, she made her first recording of the first one, Let's Light the Christmas Tree, featuring Jack Brown and the Three Jills, who were singers on her WLW radio program. The record also featured Ruth herself on keyboards, and it appeared as the first release on a brand new label, Radio Artist Records, and was recorded at the Herzog Studio on Race Street.
Soon the Christmas bells will ring throughout the world again, ringing out a song of peace and goodness to all men. Let those Christmas bells ring out with carols glad and gay, while we spend this Christmas in the good old-fashioned way.
While the 1945 Let's Light the Christmas Tree was a Cincinnati recording milestone in many ways, I have a special affection for the flip side, which takes Jack Brown out of the mix and leaves the Three Jills to their own devices with the help of bandleader Jimmy Wilbur in Jingle Bells. For whatever reason, Ruth opted to couple Let's Light with a traditional favorite, although one heavily touched up, probably by herself, rather than one of her own Christmas songs. And on the surface, it can be said that this side represents the typical Christmas fare on WLW some 70 years ago. For me, however, it serves as a gateway to Christmas past in Cincinnati and what it may have meant to my own family. In December 1945, my grandfather, Jack Neil White, came home from serving in the Pacific Theater as a Signal Corpsman. My mother once said that when he came back, she felt she hardly knew him. He had entered the service the very month she was born, and her mother's arms were the only ones that she ever knew. Recently, my aunt Trish Waldemeyer posted a photo that had been taken in Chicago when my grandfather had just finished basic training and was about to ship out. He and my grandmother are standing next to my mother's pram on a city street, with my mother literally a babe in arms. After my grandmother died, I inherited some of the old records that belonged to her, and among them was a Peggy Lee side that was worn to the nub through countless playings with an old steel needle. I can just imagine her with a portable phonograph, seated at Union Terminal and listening to this record over and over again.
Waiting for the train to come in. Waiting for my man to come home. I've counted every minute of each livelong day. Been so melancholy since he went away. I've shed a million teardrops or more. Waiting for the one I adore. I'm waiting in the depot by the railroad track, looking for the choo-choo train that brings him back. I'm waiting for my life to begin. Waiting for the train to come in.
Years ago, downtown Cincinnati was a magical place to be during the holidays. It still puts on a good Christmas show even today, but it was very different then. Some vestige of that was still left when I was a little boy. The city was normally a dizzying display of flashing electric lights and neon, so add to that all of the garlands, the tinsel, the wreaths, and additional Christmas lights that draped the whole of downtown, and all of the hustle and bustle in the busy department stores. It was in that exciting environment that my mother finally got to know who her daddy was. I never met him. He died before I was born. He didn't long outlast the war. My mother once said that he had been called on shore to Hiroshima not long after the atomic bomb had been dropped to do emergency radio communications. Family members who knew him both before and after the war all agreed that after Jack came back, he was never the same, and he never talked about his war experiences. It's been nearly a decade since my grandmother has been gone, and my mother joined them just 5 years ago. So when I hear Jimmy Wilbur and the Three Jills sing Jingle Bells, it's not hard for me to imagine that special Cincinnati Christmas of 1945, the year my grandfather's train finally came in. May your holiday be filled with joy. I'm Dave Lewis.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way, jingle all the way, jingling. Oh, would find it is to ride in a one-horse sleigh. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, would find it is to ride on Christmas Day in a one-horse open sleigh.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ann Arenstein with Around Cincinnati, wishing all our listeners a season of light, laughter, and peace, and a healthy, happy, and fulfilled new year.
I'm Sonny Mormon. I'm going to play you a little Christmas song.
Hi, I'm Kelly Ritchie, and I would like to share my favorite Christmas story with you. I grew up playing the piano, and by the time I was a teenager, I really wanted something that was more expressive. I wanted something that was louder, a little bit more exciting. Not that the piano can't be exciting, but I wanted something that reflected the emotions that I was feeling. And I had a next-door neighbor that had a set of drums, and I used to play the drums in his basement until one day he said, why don't you take the drums home with you and play? And so I, you know, was excited. I brought the drums home, set them up in my bedroom, and banged on them 24/7 until my dad finally said, look, if you'll give the drums back, I'll buy you whatever you want. And that was getting close to Christmas, and I told my dad, I said, I want an electric guitar. And, you know, I never really dreamed I'd get one. I would go to the music store and I'd look at guitars and they were expensive, you know, and we were a very middle-class family, you know, things like that would have been a luxury, but you know, my dad never really acted like he was that interested in getting me an electric guitar. He just kind of played it off. And my dad, he worked at Sears. And so when I was growing up, the Sears catalog was something that people really shopped out of a lot. This was before Amazon, before the internet and all that kind of stuff. So I found a guitar in the catalog and I said, well, you know, what about this? So anyway, long story short, we always celebrated Christmas on Christmas Day. But this one year, 1977, I was 15 years old. For Christmas Eve, my parents went next door and came back with this box that they had wrapped. And I wasn't one to go looking for presents that, you know, they didn't really have to hide from me. If anything, I'd ask my parents, where are the presents hidden? Because I didn't want to blow the surprise. But I guess this was a little bit bigger and they hid it at the neighbor's house. They came back and I thought, wow, oh no, surely not. Really? You know, I was so excited. I opened it up and it was an electric guitar and a little like 3-watt amp. And the guitar was a Sunburst Les Paul copy, a Sears and Roebuck guitar. I went through 3 of them in 3 months, and I immediately started taking lessons. I think it was like January 5th or something. I don't know that that's the actual date, but it was like the first week in January I started taking lessons from the father of a couple of guys I used to go skating with, a man named Eddie Beckley. Boy, he was a great teacher. And so my Les Paul copy, little 3-watt amp is where I started, and I got that on Christmas Eve of 1977, and that's when my journey began. And it was absolutely the best Christmas that I ever had. It was something that I'll always remember. It was really special, and that's my favorite Christmas story. Merry Christmas, everyone.
My name is Aaron Smith, and I'm the author and illustrator of The Pfeffernuss Goose. I was in Berlin a few years ago for Christmas, where I discovered this marvelous little cookie that inspired me to write a children's book for Christmas, and I will read it now. The Pfeffernusse Goose. In the morning, when it's cold, old folks feel so very old. But that is not the case, you see, for kids of 9 or 4 or 3, especially if there is snow. Nothing like it. Snow, you know. And so it is this very fluff that makes up winter dreams and stuff. On such a day, with snow and that, awoke a boy who, like a cat, sleeps much too much for a thing his size. Still, even little things must rise. The boy was Tom, if I recall, and he was really pretty small, smaller even than his sis, who insisted that he call her Miss. Tom got up, the sleepy head, and brushed himself up off the bed, and that is when he heard the honk. A sort of honk. A wild cronk. Through his window, beneath the spruce, he saw the source, the Christmas goose. Cooped up in the chicken pen, there flapped the goose who, now and then, would honk so loud and cronk so great, it'd stir the trees and shake the gate. Tom put on his woolly socks and crept downstairs just like a fox, and found his mother at the sink. She clearly hadn't slept a wink. "That darn goose," his mother spat, "kept me awake and roused the cat. It won't stop honking, even for bread. I'll be happy when that goose is dead." Tom had his breakfast, toast and jam, a glass of milk, a side of ham, and nearly finished eating when in came his sister, Gwendolyn. "That stupid goose," the sister cried. "Woke me up from way outside. Make it stop," she screamed at Tom. "Well, go on then," said Tom's mom. So Tom got up and donned his coat and flung a scarf around his throat, and out he went to so reduce the honking of that awful goose. Tromping through the snow was hard, but tromp he did across the yard, and got to where the goose was kept. But when he reached the gate, he wept. "It isn't fair," Tom whimpered low, "that I should come out in the snow to go and pacify the goose. And what's the use? Oh, what's the use?" As Tom stood there in the breeze, snowflake dusted by the trees, he heard another creature cry. It sounded like it was nearby. Tom looked up, and there he saw, in the coop and on the straw, a massive goose, white as sleet, with sky blue eyes and orange feet. "Mr. Goose," Tom said, polite, "your honking kept us up last night. But now I see you're quiet, so..." And on that note, he turned to go. But then the goose dropped to the floor, and louder now it bawled some more, and louder still it banged its bill upon the walls and windowsill. "Stop it, stop," Tom had to shout. From the sink, his mom looked out. "Hush now, please," he begged the goose. "Only if you let me loose." Tom stared, wide-eyed, at the bird and didn't say another word. Not like the goose, who went to say, "Well, come now, boy, sometime today." "But you're our goose, our Christmas goose. I have no excuse to let you loose." The goose replied, "How would you feel if you were someone's Christmas meal? Would you, like me, try breaking free or wait for death here patiently?" The goose and Tom looked at each other. Tom didn't want to upset his mother. But seeing as the goose could speak, should it live to die another week? "But today is Christmas Eve. I simply cannot let you leave. There isn't any time or way to replace a goose by Christmas Day." But the goose had a plan, a clever one too. "You do something for me, I'll do something for you. If you let me go," the cunning goose said, "you'll have something far better for dinner instead. I'll teach you to make a holiday treat more Christmassy even than roasted goose meat." Tom asked, "What's Christmas without a roast goose?" To which the bird answered, "Why, Pfeffernusse." Tom said, "What's that? Some kind of bird?" "Some kind of bird. Don't be absurd." "No, no," said the goose, trying hard to be nice. "A Pfeffernusse is simply a cookie with spice." Seeing the boy was not really impressed, the goose went on with gusto and zest. "But it isn't just that," the goose said. "Oh, no. They're cuter than kittens and whiter than snow. They're flavored with ginger and cinnamon, too. They're delightful to crunch, but better to chew. They're sweetened with honey, molasses, and love. They're the most Christmassy cookie that I can think of. But what makes them so good? I'll tell you the trick. Black pepper is added to give them a kick." Tom licked his lips and he said to the goose, "If I let you go, you'll make Pfeffernusse? I'll teach you, my boy, and you'll be a winner for making your family cookies for dinner." He thought for a minute and then said, "Okay." He opened the gate and the goose flew away. Tom stood there, shocked. He couldn't believe that he lost Christmas dinner and on Christmas Eve. He returned to the house and was crying again, when out from the kitchen yelled Gwendolyn. "It's about time," his sister professed. "That honking was making me ever so stressed. Now I can count up the presents I'm due for being the best little sister to you." "You do that, Gwen." And Gwen said with a hiss, "I told you before, you call me Miss." Then in walked their mother, her hand to her head. She looked at her children and sluggishly said, "Stop it, you two." And then just to Tom, "Did you finally silence that goose for your mom?" "Well, in a way," said Tom, acting coy. He really was smart for a little farm boy. "Good," sighed the mom. "Thank you," she said, and then went upstairs to rest on the bed. "How did you do it?" Gwen wanted to know. "Did you hit it with rocks or pelt it with snow?" "I fed it some berries," the little boy lied. Then in burst their father, who had been outside. Their dad was a massive and powerful bloke. His beard was a forest that quaked as he spoke. "Where is the goose that we had in the pen? Where is the goose?" the dad said again. Tom looked away with nothing to say. "Boy," said his dad, "what happened today?" Tom looked at his father with tears in his eyes. Lying to him would be rather unwise. "I let it go," Tom said with a shout. "The goose, it could talk, so I let it out." "What?" said his father. "Papa, it's true. The Christmas goose tricked me. I'm telling you." "Tricked by a goose," Tom's father said. "So tomorrow, for dinner, we'll be eating just bread." Then the dad sighed, loud, I presume, and sent his son Tom upstairs to his room. Tom didn't come out for the rest of the day. He figured his family would like it that way. That night in his room, feeling quite small, Tom sat all alone and watched the snow fall. Then came the morning. Christmas was here, the liveliest, merriest day of the year. But Tom wasn't merry. Tom wasn't glad. He was still feeling guilty and terribly sad. Without a nice goose to have Christmas night, the whole holiday just didn't feel right. Tom got out of bed and slippered his feet and crept down the stairs for something to eat. He discovered his mother, his sis, and his dad eating breakfast and wearing their holiday plaid. "Merry Christmas," Tom offered, as sweet as he could. "Merry Christmas," they muttered. "We're off to the wood." "Yes," said the dad with his ox of a voice. "We're hunting for quail since we haven't a choice." "I'll get my coat," Tom said with a cheer. "No, we're going hunting. You're staying here." So out went Tom's family, which is to say, they left Tom alone, and on Christmas Day. Tom stayed where he stood, right there in the hall, quietly feeling ever so small, when after an hour and maybe a half, from somewhere behind him, Tom felt a draft. Tom turned around, and by the back door was standing the goose, as real as before. Tom yelled, "Mr. Goose," and the goose said, "Hello, may I come in and get out of the snow?" So in came the goose, and with him he brought a nest full of numerous groceries he bought. "To the kitchen, my boy, you lead the way. With your family gone, we mustn't delay." They went to the kitchen, Tom and his guest. They started the oven and unpacked the nest. Nutmeg and sugar and cinnamon sticks and flour and honey went into the mix. They added some eggs and a spoonful of fat, and the bird stepped back and said, "Look at that." "What about pepper?" Tom said with concern. "I nearly forgot. Give this a good turn." The goose handed Tom a wood pepper mill, and over the bowl Tom ground it until the goose said, "That's good. We just want a touch. Now mix it all up. It shouldn't take much." Tom mixed the dough, and the goose got a tray in what must have been a wild display, and together they rolled out tiny dough balls and baked them until the smell filled the halls. The goose took them out when they were just right, and with sugar the two of them powdered them white. "The cookies were perfect," so said the goose. "Go on," he insisted. "Your first pfeffernusse." Tom picked one up. His face was aglow and his eyes shimmered like new-fallen snow. He then took a bite, and what can I say? There's nothing like pfeffernusse on Christmas Day. But right at that moment, he heard from out front his family just coming back from the hunt. What would they do if they were to look and see a goose teaching their son how to cook? Tom ran, but he tripped and fell on the floor, and that's when his family opened the door. In came his dad, holding nothing, and then in came his mother, carrying Gwen. "I'll make you some tea," said the mom to her daughter. "Or would you prefer a glass of plain water?" Gwen's face was red and was crying as though she had just fallen down headfirst in the snow. They caught sight of Tom, still on the floor, and his mom asked what he was lying there for. But before Tom could answer, his father said, "Wow, what is that smell I am smelling right now?" "Nothing," said Tom. "Well, it's a surprise." His family viewed him with skeptical eyes. They stepped over Tom before he could stand. They got to the kitchen and made a demand. "Tom, what is this?" shouted his dad. "Tom," yelled his mom. She sure sounded mad. Tom came to the kitchen and found it was clean, and the goose who had been there was nowhere to be seen. "What are those?" asked his father, eyeing the tray of pfeffernusse cookies baked freshly that day. "They're called pfeffernusse. They're better than cake. They're to say sorry for my Christmas mistake." "Honey, how nice," said his mother, so sweet. And they all had a bite of the Christmas treat. Mother and father and even Miss Gwen, in that first bite, found Christmas again. They gave Tom a hug and went to the tree and opened their gifts as one family. The goose had been right. Nothing so good as cookies for making things feel like they should. After their dinner of cookies and tea, Tom and his family sang merrily. the chorus of carols lifted the air as if there had never been worry or care. They sang till the fire had shrunk low and red, and then went upstairs and got into bed. And faintly was heard from deep in the spruce the faraway honk of the Pfeffernuss goose. That was The Pfeffernuss Goose, read by the author Aaron Smith. Merry Christmas.
That was a song by Rick Braun, Grandma's Music Box. You've been listening to the 11th Annual Around Cincinnati Christmas Special. You'll find a playlist on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Lee Hay, and from the staff of Cincinnati Public Radio, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.